Good?
Bad.
WTF. Well, I'm
thinking.
Welcome to episode 58 of The Good, The Bad, and The WTF Are They Thinking. Why, taking a swig of water at that point on the intro? It's highly unprofessional over there.
No one can hear you, mate.
I can hear you, so they can hear you. So that's how mics work. Picked up.
I disagree.
Well, it's a bit of a quiet week this week compared to last week. You know, there was a lot going on in the world of cinema. The fallout of the Oscars, obviously. Now, it was the Grammys this week, but we don't care about the Grammys, do we? I have a warped view on the Grammys because of The Simpsons kind of taking the piss out of it for so many years that I kind of look at the Grammys in the same way. So it's highly influenced me. But
I briefly ran through the list, and I'll be honest, I don't know a lot of the songs that won, and I don't know a lot of the artists.
That's when you know you're getting old, when you just don't know anymore.
Or you don't
care.
Got
this music.
It's just that, you don't really care about latest trends, do you? The older you get, it's like, well, if it finds me, that's fine, but I'm not going to search for you. You have to search for me.
That's a good way to live, to be fair. I think that's a better way to live, actually. But yeah, the Grammys. But other than that, on the movie side of things, I saw a movie called Last Night in Soho, which came out in 2021. And it was good. It was a very good movie. I did a little post about it on our Twitter because I was inspired by the movie. What I loved most about it was that it was actually filmed in Soho, on the streets of Soho, while there was life going on there as well. So there were moments where they were actually filming secretly. What do you call that? Is it called guerrilla film? Is that what it's called?
I think that's without permit. Yeah, it's guerrilla filmmaking is when they do it without permits, which is a more 70s earlier thing. I'm not too sure that it's guerrilla filmmaking. They probably still had a permit, but they probably did it in another way, kind of like how they did Under the Skin.
Yeah, there were extras who didn't know they were extras, basically. Unpaid extras. Personally, if I was in the background, I'd send a little note to the studio and be like, hey, what the fuck?
Where's my royalty?
Asked me if I could be in this movie. I don't know. Maybe there was a document that they made them all sign eventually. Who knows? But, I really liked that. It really caught the organic, authentic Soho. And they even filmed it in an Irish pub, which I went to a couple of weeks ago, but maybe a couple of months ago, actually, called The Toucan, which is meant to be the best Guinness in London, according to TripAdvisor. But that's a bit of a tourist trap. But it is good. I did have a good pint of Guinness while I was there, and it was just, it was cool to see that. It was something very familiar. So I saw that lovely movie. Did you watch anything new this week apart from the movie we're obviously going to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to stop you there and say, what is the best Guinness in London then? If that's not the best Guinness in London, what is your preferred best Guinness in London?
The best Guinness in London that I've had is at the Guinea Grill, which is in Mayfair. Now, unfortunately, it's in Mayfair. It makes it sound really wanky and stuff, but it's actually the best. And it's like a little pub down a side street, off the main road. So people can pour out into the little side alley and drink without any cars coming past. And they serve it in the old style glass as well. It's good. It's a good pint of Guinness. It's a very good pint. It's the best one I've had so far.
There you go. A little plug.
The Guinea Grill. Yeah, I highly recommend it. What movies have you watched?
I watched the latest Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Netflix.
Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. That was on Netflix. Yeah. Was that any good?
I liked it. I mean, the reviews weren't great, but I also think, what are we looking for here? I mean, this is a tired franchise. They've made countless sequels, remakes, prequels, spin-offs, whatever you want to call them. Apart from the first one, which is a classic, and the second one, which is fun, and the remake in 2003, which I didn't mind. But the others, they're forgettable. Some are awful. And this one, I think, is sort of in the middle. You know, I think it's enjoyable. I think it's got some interesting kills. I mean, the bus kill scene is a particular highlight, which everyone sort of gravitas towards. I think there's parts of it that work, there's parts that don't work. I mean, people say, oh, the characters are like boring, one-dimensional. And I'm thinking, have you ever seen a slasher movie? Like, how many character arcs of interesting characters are in a slasher movie? They're tropes, aren't they?
They are
tropes getting ready to be... Look, they're lambs to the slaughter. That's all they are.
They are lambs to the slaughter, yeah. I was just reading the synopsis of that, and I was just thinking... How do you make a horror movie or a slasher movie with characters in it who are all going to get killed? And how do you make yourself root against the characters in the movie more so than annoying teenagers? And they seem to have found it with this movie, because it says influencers looking to breathe new life into Texas. So not only are they annoying teenagers, they're annoying teenagers who are on their phones all the time.
Oh, believe me, they do not hold back then. They get brutalized in this movie. There's obviously a little bit of social commentary there, but it's so blunt that it's a little bit too obvious. You could see it coming a mile away.
Do you think that the certain type of teenagers, because it was always teenagers who were getting killed in these movies, do you think back in the day that there were a certain breed of teenagers that other people disliked more so than other teenagers? Because when you look at the generation now, you go, we hate teenagers, but it's the influence of teenagers that stand out above the rest as the most annoying and unbearable. And would it be the pothead teenagers? Which ones do you reckon?
No, I think it was, if we go back to if you think of John Hughes movies or the slasher movies or anything like that, it's always the jocks and the cheerleaders.
Yeah,
They're the worst ones, and the geeks.
This is the new breed of jocks. Yeah. Cheerleaders, yeah, people
the geeks,
take selfies.
The geeks are normally the ones that get bullied, never get the girl. I mean, we've seen Revenge of the Nerds, we've seen Weird Science, we've seen their movies. It's always the jocks and the cheerleaders. And then you've always got one joker in the pack. There's always a joker in the pack that just seems to just go a bit too far. They don't have a joker in this pack.
So there's no one likable in this pack, is what you're telling me. Is there one who's smarter than the rest? There's always at least one in there.
There's not really many that are smarter than the rest, I wouldn't say, because everyone makes a decision that's the wrong decision. But it's a slasher movie. That's what a slasher movie is. Everyone makes the wrong decision. It's that famous scene in Scary Movie where Karma Electra's running away and there's two signs that says certain death or safety, and she runs down the certain death road. That is... In a nutshell, that is a slasher movie, isn't it? They always pick the worst possible outcome.
Oh, yeah, of course. The best one was... what's the movie called? The movie about the house. What's the house called? The parody of slasher movies where they...
Oh, The Cabin in the Woods.
That's it. That completely slipped my mind. Cabin in the Woods, yeah. That was funny. That was funny. That was a good piss taker. At the time, that came out at the right time as well, because I feel like that was just before the shift of good horror movies started coming back, actually after that, didn't it? Because there was a period where there was a lot of shit horror movies coming out.
I mean, that was shelved for 3 years, I believe. I think that was made in 2009, 2008, and they shelved it for 3 years because they did not know what to do with that movie.
Interesting. Maybe it's probably shelved for the right reason. I think it was more maybe the ambition of the where it actually goes eventually towards the end. If no one's seen it, I'm not going to ruin it now because it's not what this podcast is about.
Yeah,
about Spencer. But
it's about ruining Spencer.
Yeah, it's about ruining Spencer. But you should know that. But where it goes is very ambitious. So maybe that was why. I reckon they read the script, but this is great, and they got to the last 20 pages and they went, the fuck's going on?
I think they looked at it and they honestly looked at it and thought, I don't know what the hell we're going to do with this. There's a lot of movies like that. They make a movie and then after it's finished, I think everybody, it's like The Empty Man was the same thing. It might be also a change because I think Fox did The Cabin of Woods, I think. And same with, once Fox was done by The Empty Man and they gave that dude a shitload of money. It's his first ever movie. He never really made a movie before. I think he used to make DVD bonus features of David Fincher movies.
Yeah.
But he obviously hung around David Fincher, you can tell when you watch the movie. But then they had a change. Fox was bought out by Disney, and then you had the new heads in. They looked at this movie, and they just shelved it for a while. They did not know what to do with it, and then they just released it on stream, and it's obviously picked up a big cult following. It's the same with Cabin in the Woods. It might be a shift of management, and then they've gone, what the fuck is this? Because it's the same like football managers, right? They always come in, and then there's a player who did really well for the last manager, and for some reason this manager just singles them out as, you're never going to play for this team again.
Yeah, it does happen a lot.
And it happens the same in studios.
Yeah, that's what I say. It still had, that movie had one of the most crowd-pleasing moments, I would say. If you're watching them, it gave the people what they wanted. The scene when they release all the monsters, I was just like, they did it. They gave me what I wanted. It. Yeah, but you know when you see that view when it comes out? Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
You know when you see it, when the camera pans out and then you see all of the creatures that could have been selected, and you go, oh, wow. I sort of looking at that moment and thinking, oh, shit, there's quite some cool ones in there that I want to see. And then they were just like, you know what, fuck it, release them all.
Marvel. Before Marvel's Easter eggs, before superheroes and all the franchises did their Easter eggs, Cabin in the Woods did it first.
Yeah, so that moment was just a cool moment and well written. Yeah, enjoyed it. But should we talk about today's movie?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. This might be our most sophisticated movie so far.
I think you want to check yourself.
Maybe. Before I wreck myself? Before I wreck myself? What's that from?
Is it the night before? I think it's the night before.
Yeah, it's the night before. Well done. It's Before I Wreck Myself. I love that bit. Anyway, but that was also, you know, that was set on Christmas Eve. Great segue. So is this movie.
Is this a Christmas movie?
Before we get into it.
I suppose it is. It's set around Christmas. I mean, we count A Diner as a Christmas movie. We count It's a Wonderful Life as a Christmas movie. This counts as a Christmas movie.
I guess so. It's set over Christmas Day, Boxing Day. I guess it is. It's very festive. Yeah, this is set on Christmas Eve in 1991, and it's basically the story of those 3 days that she being Diana, spends with the royal family in the Queen's Sandringham estate. And this is a very rocky time, a very turbulent time in her relationship with Prince Charles. And how did this meet your expectations? Because I went into this mainly focused on Kristen Stewart playing Diana.
It met my expectations of what I thought this movie was going to be, which was going to be a lot of long stares, internal struggles, a lot of acting with your eyes and with your body, which I'm a fan of. I'm more of a fan of that kind of acting than external like outbursts, like I'm sad now. I don't like that. I like more when it feels like there's an internal struggle and you can feel that with her performance. I'm a big Kristen Stewart fan anyway. I'm a big Kristen Stewart fan anyway. I think she's been incredible for the last few years. I think she's got rid of that Twilight shine over her, which I always thought was unfair. Same with Robert Pattinson. And I still think people still call her the Twilight Girl. And she surpassed that ages ago. When's the last one? 2012? Get over it. You know, it's 10 years now. She's Oscar nominated, and you can see why. I'm very surprised by watching this movie, though, how low it did on the awards circuit. Because apart from Kristen Stewart, nothing else was nominated. And watching this movie, I thought Johnny Greenwood's score was the best score out of the two scores he did this year. It's superior to The Power of the Dog. I think it might be the best score I heard this year or last year.
There you go.
It's incredibly complex. The score was
great. Yeah. Do you know what? It was very reliant on the score as well at times, because you take the music out of some of the scenes and you don't have the same emotion. There's a lot of tense. It's very, very tense. Ooh. It's like bottled up tension, isn't it? It's suppressed tension, suppressed emotions, which is what this kind of movie's all about. And he does capture that really well. I was surprised as well. Do you know who was great in this as well? Timothy Spall.
Yeah.
He's brilliant in this.
But he's great in everything. Let's be honest. He is a class actor.
He sold it. I forgot it was him. He really sold that role to me. Forgive me. I can't remember his name. The guy who plays the chef. Why can't I find his name?
That's the slip of the tongue. Sean Harris.
I always remember
as the creepy subway dweller in the movie Creep. That was the first time I ever saw Sean Harris. I still think that's his best performance. Yeah, in Creep. Do you remember that one with Frankie Poteen where she goes to a party, she falls asleep in the subway, in the London subway, wakes up and she's all alone. I think that's a criminally underrated horror movie, and he's fantastic.
I actually forgot about that movie. Yeah, that is good. That is good. That came out in 2004.
That's when everyone talking about that. Up.
Yeah, I remember everyone talking about that in school or something. He's also from Woodbridge in Suffolk, which is very close to home for us. So, representing. I thought he was brilliant in that.
I think again, he's an actor.
There was a lot of good performances. Even something like a very subtle performance, Queen Elizabeth, Stella, is it Gonet or Gonet? Either way. Played the Queen very well. Very subtly played the Queen. Made her feel really unapproachable and evil, didn't she? Kind of gave a little bit of an evil twang to the royal family, this movie.
Yeah, this was told from the perspective of Diana, who feels like an outcast, who feels like she's like there's a spotlight shone on her and everything she does is wrong. She feels very rebellious. I mean, it's a weird thing, the Princess Diana effect, because we're too young to really understand. I'm not a royalist. I know who Princess Diana is. I know she's the people's princess. But at the age when she died, I was too young to understand who she was.
Yep.
And so I'm kind of out of touch with how precious she is considered amongst the world. However, from hearing from people who knew her, apparently Kristen Stewart gets this spot on.
Yeah. I read a few people that were close to her went to see the movie and said the mannerisms were... She nailed the mannerisms. And you forgot it was her, and it was a really, really good performance. Mm. I'm looking at this performance, and I need to now see the eyes of Tammy Faye to really understand how Jessica Chastain beat her, because her performance must be incredible, because this was fucking good.
For me, it's still Olivia Colman is the best performance so far.
That was good. I prefer this. I think this one was better. I think this is harder as well, because this is all her. She's very much the centerpiece of this movie, and she's in pretty much every single scene. Isn't she? She really carries this movie on her back.
I think it looks beautiful. It's weird. This movie looks beautiful, but also looks cold and sterile. It just feels unlived. It just feels like long halls. And it almost feels like you're watching a gothic ghost story. It almost feels like if suddenly you saw a ghost, which you do, we do see Anne Boleyn in this. Almost feels like it could turn into the Canterbury Tales. You know, it feels like the Taming of the Shrew. You know, it does feel gothic in a way.
It does, yeah. It does a good job of making this lifestyle of being like eternally wealthy seem very unappealing. Like, I almost don't want to be part of this
apart
family,
from the kitchen.
Very easy.
The idea of this storeroom of glorious food that you can just open and pick at during the night. let me tell you, I wouldn't survive long there. I'd be like,
good. Yeah, terrible. Good until Timothy Spall turns up in the middle of the night to fucking scare you and shame you while you're eating cake in the middle of the night.
That's the risk you take.
That is a risk you take. It was good though. Did you like this movie? Did you enjoy this movie?
I did. I thought I would. I mean, I like Paolo Lorraine's movies. He's king of the biopics. I mean, he's done No. He's done Neralda. He's done Jackie, and this and Jackie are quite compatible. You could watch these back to back. I mean, Jackie's the same. It's a lot of Natalie Portman walking around the White House, sort of in mourning. So he's very good. He's a very good director for this. Stephen Knight wrote this, who's another great underrated British writer, I think, who obviously did Dirty Pretty Things, Eastern Promises, and Locke. So it had the talent behind the screen to propel it on the screen.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I mean, he's certified, isn't he, in a way, Pablo. Certified biopic man. And this comes after a movie called Diana that came out in 2013, wasn't it, which was a biopic.
There was a movie that came out the same year called Diana the Musical, which was nominated for a load of Razzies. Yeah.
Diana the Musical.
And so if you compare this to Diana the Musical, which I haven't seen, but considering that it's got all the Razzies, it's probably in bad taste. So I imagine this is the better version.
Yeah, it probably is. I would like to see how it compares to the 2013 one, which is played by Naomi Watts. Looking at the comparisons, Kirsten Stewart looks like a better Diana.
I remember the trailer for it. It was one of them that sort of just fell under the radar, but I think it focused on a different story with her falling in love with a doctor, if I'm right.
Right.
Whereas this one, that one feels a little bit like a light biopic. It's like, oh, let's put Diana in the movie, but let's make it a little bit lighthearted, or at least appear that way. Whereas this one feels a lot more grittier. Feels like we're watching a woman's internal struggle. And I prefer these kind of biopics than like a full-on one, like you know, you grew up, you lived and you died, because I think when you condense a story, you lose some of the impact. And I think sometimes just picking a moment of someone's life is much better than the whole thing.
Yeah, I think so. These 3 days as well, there's a lot going on in these 3 days, but there's also not a lot going on. But you know, a lot is resolved. It feels like very vital 3 days. There's a good arc here, isn't there, from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do like a full one, I'm ashamed to say it, but it probably needs to be a miniseries.
Yeah,
like
yeah, it probably
does. To get like the full experience.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know how much of this over these 3 days is true, as well.
It's hard
to
know
how deep it goes. It's hard to know.
I mean, they're very private, aren't they, the royal family? And also, this is an internal struggle, so the only person that would really know is Diana. So there's always a little bit of poetic license to all of this stuff.
Yeah. I'd be like, did you really eat KFC by the River Thames?
I wondered that as well. I wondered whether that was the most real thing. Did you also try and look at the bag to see it, how, like, that it looked like authentic KFC at that period? Because I was like, it needs to look real now. We all know what KFC looks like.
It looked so much better back then. Like the early 90s, that's how I remember KFC as well. Like the old style.
Brown bag and a bucket.
Yeah, brown bag and a bucket. And the real prominent red and white stripes as well.
Yeah.
Rather as now it's a bit, it's not the same, is it? It doesn't feel the same anymore. Kentucky felt like a treat. That really did. Like that perfectly summed up when you would have Kentucky. You know, when you take your two kids away from your prince husband and start a new life in London, the first meal you eat would be a Kentucky one. That really would.
It feels, when did Kentucky start to branch out? Because as a kid, I always remember you had either the fish fillet or you had the chicken bucket. And now it's like branched out completely.
Oh, yeah, they had to move at the times, didn't they? I mean, there was nothing better than the bucket.
No, I don't think they should.
The cob.
be stubborn.
The beans, the gravy, the chips. Chips were better back then, of course.
And the what was the ice cream you used to get with it? The Vinetta?
Vinetta.
Yeah.
Vinetta.
I haven't seen that for ages.
No, right. Have
to look, I'm looking out for that tomorrow, though.
There's no way they have it in KFC, though.
No, I mean like in the shops or something. Get a KFC and say, Vinetta, please.
Do you still do Vinetta? They're like, we stopped doing that in 1998. Wow, really? Fuck. It was so good. It was good. I always remember being a bit like, man, I don't like it that much.
It was but now plain, I think back to it was good. It was plain. As a kid, you wanted like all the frazzle and dazzle with ice cream.
Yeah.
As you get older, you think, do you know what? Just like milk chocolate and vanilla ice cream is fine.
It's perfect. Perfect little treat. Yeah, when you're younger, you want like green toxic apple flavor, please.
Yeah. All Skittles on it. And it's like back at Pizza Hut when you used to make your own ice cream and it'd just be like a little bit of ice cream there. Just
why did they let us do that?
Gummy bear on there. And that shit on there. It's not there anymore now. Who knows? You can make your own salad.
Why did they allow that? Why did they allow that though? Why did they allow kids to have free reign of a big ice cream and sweet parlor?
Especially the sauces.
Of course we're going to go crazy.
Especially the sauces. Oh, yeah. I mean, that used to just be like a sticky mess. You used to go over there. It used to look like the Death Squad had been in there. Just all sticky. There's all strawberry and chocolate and what have you. All
very
sprayed
unhygienic
across the workspace. Yeah, it was terrible.
I mean, COVID would have killed that off straight away. It was killed off way before COVID, but COVID would have been like, nah, fuck, that's, you know, that's a feasting ground for us. We're laying in there. Everyone's dipping their hands in.
That's it. One of the mothers shouting, Harry, stop licking the counter.
Yeah, stop eating the Smarties off the ground.
5 second rule.
5 second rule indeed. Also, like, after you have a pizza, have you ever wanted anything else after a pizza? I feel like pizza is something that just finishes you off. Whether it's that age, we had a small pizza and then yeah, they'd be like, yeah, we'll fucking stock up on ice cream. If I had a pizza now, I'm not eating anything for like 4 hours.
If it's
after
a shared pizza, maybe you feel a little bit like you want more. But that's where you get garlic bread.
True, but that's just more bread.
It depends. Yeah, that's true. It depends who you're eating pizza with, because some people are like, that they want a pizza, but they don't like to eat too much pizza. They have like two or three slices, which is fair game because now you got more pizza.
Yeah, true, true.
Unless they save it, dangerous. But let's be honest. I mean, I like day old pizza, but the thing is, if I save it, I'll eat it, and that's happening. Like in the morning, I'll open it up. Think, oh, should I have cereal or pizza? I know what the option is already before I've even said it.
So we're not allowed. We shouldn't be allowed to be adults, really, should we? That's really a decision that you just, as a kid, you would just never have that luxury. Can I have pizza for breakfast? No. Oh, okay.
Well, as an adult, like, it does
no
not matter anymore.
Tell me.
You still look around, though. You still look around, just thinking, like, I'm sure that I can get
is
away
this
with
okay?
this.
Okay. Someone across the street sees you through their window. Catch eyes. Oh, just no.
Someone rings you and says, you eating pizza in the morning? No, Dad,
no?
I'm not. Why did I get this right, photo of you
like
eating
you
pizza
are
in the morning? It could be my anyone.
He's wearing the shirt I got you for Christmas. Damn it. Oh, well. Oh, yeah, we went on a track there. Kentucky. Yeah. And it was also better when you called it Kentucky. You know, it was proper. KFC doesn't sound the same. Sounds nasty.
Yeah.
Sounds
but a lot of people go to like loads of chicken places now. So many chicken places. KFC is like less. Like, it's not special anymore because there's competitors and some are equally as good as KFC. Well, some
yeah,
are,
but, there's something
but you make
about
that risk on your own behalf.
There is something about the flavor of KFC which I do think is unbeatable. I think it's probably that nostalgic familiar taste in it. You know what you're getting. It never tastes any different. It always tastes the same. Consistency is there. You know, they've got it nailed down. That's, you know, centuries of you know, it being around. Oh, Colonel himself. Back to the movie anyway.
Do you know, I heard something just to talk about KFC. I heard something about KFC this week, which was incredible. If you look at KFC on Twitter, they follow 11 people. five of the old Spice Girls and four people called Herb. They follow 11 herbs and spices.
That's clever.
That is really clever. That is brilliant. And who decided to look at KFC that day and go, why do they only follow 11 people? That is clever.
The herbs are so random as well. I'm now looking at them. Herb Sendek. Herb Dean. Herb Waters. Herb J. Wesson Jr.
You'd be happy if you were a Herb or an ex-former Spice Girl right now.
Yeah, you would. That is clever. I'll give them that. That's very good. That's very good. So you need to look at I think it's KFC. Is it the Spanish KFC? Is it the Spanish one? Maybe it's not. KFC. One of them's just crazy. It's their official account. KFC India? I'm going to find it. Maybe it's KFC Italy.
Twitter or?
Yeah. Oh, why can't I find it? KFC. It's not KFC South Africa, is it? They go crazy with the memes. I swear it's KFC. It's something like KFC. Brazil? Is it Brazil? I'm finding this in real time, people, by the way. KFC Twitter account.
Is it KFC Malaysia? Because I've typed in KFC Malaysia and there's a lot of memes.
It might be. There's one KFC where it's just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy what they tweet. And it makes no sense. I'm going to search them all, actually. I'm going to look at them all. KFC. I will find it. They just go meme crazy, but the memes are very out there.
KFC only follow four people. But theirs aren't as... theirs are weird, actually. I don't really know why they follow four people.
Who do they follow?
They're random. They're not even worth, like, saying.
Yeah. I do like it when accounts just go a little bit crazy, a little bit rogue, when they really don't need to. KFC's social media. There you go. That's what they love. Ah, there it is. I think I found it. It's KFC ES. How did that take me so long? Yeah, go on their Twitter account.
That was the second further down. Yeah, that was underneath Malaysia. I don't know why Malaysia came first.
Just click, go on KFC _ ES and then click media and then just enjoy the content. Even though it's not in English, you just know it's funny. You just look at it like it's just crazy.
They've got a lot there.
Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense, does it?
So what? That's worth a follow.
You know you're going to get something stupid on there. That's just going
to
be
funny. But like when you're feeling down, that's like to see like a KFC meme that will like brighten your day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. I love that there is someone whose job is to do this, and that is absolutely fantastic. And I'm almost jealous. I'm absolutely almost jealous that they get to do this.
They get paid to post shit. There's nothing promotional on there.
There's literally nothing. They don't promote a new product that's coming out. There's no deals. It's just memes. KFC Spanish is just memes. Do they sell chicken? Do they sell any chicken in Spain? In KFC. I've never seen a KFC in Spain, to be honest.
No, but I'm not looking out for one.
No, you don't if you're going on holiday, do you? You don't go, oh, let's go KFC.
Yeah, let's go KFC. We've flown all this way. Let's have a KFC.
Let's experience the culture of KFC. Yeah, no, it just doesn't happen, does it? We should probably talk a bit more about Spencer before we move on to our top five. We've been talking about KFC for a bit. As fun as it is. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's not much too much to say about this movie. It kind of, I mean, I watched the first half in the gym again. I did my usual routine, watched it in the gym, and I'll be honest, I was as I was watching this at the start, I was like, ah, oh, I kind of regret picking this movie at the beginning because I thought, oh, there's not going to be much to say about this movie. But then as it went on, the second half of the movie really picked up. It's probably when it hits nighttime on Christmas Eve is when the movie gets really good. And the scene where she gives the presents to young Will and Harry, and that whole scene is ad-libbed as well. There's no written scenes for that, which is really good. And knowing that after I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, that scene was great. That scene was really good. Kind of just showed her relationship with them. I think the movie took off from there, and then the breakdown, the pearl necklace, just everything. Like she was just silenced, wasn't she, as a person in this movie? I don't know about real life. I'm not going to comment on real life, but she was silenced as a person in this movie, and there was an affair going on. She knew about it. Everyone seemed to know about it, and everyone knew that she was on the way out, and that's kind of like the feeling you got throughout the movie, and I think they did a really good job of capturing that.
Yeah, she felt out of place in this movie. Really, it felt isolated. I think that's a good word to describe it. Really, there were times where it felt like she was the only person there, which must have been a cheap production, because there's only one person there, and she's just like walking through these endless rooms, some in that place and some in the place where she grew up. And it feels like she's lost her identity. It feels like...
Oh, completely.
They're trying to mold her into something that she doesn't want to be. I noticed that there's no Prince Andrew in this movie as well.
Oh, yeah, what a surprise. No one fancies playing his role.
What was he doing that week? He was?
Yeah, there was a Prince Andrew in this movie. He was played by Nicholas Court or Coet.
They must have said that very quietly because I don't remember Prince Andrew.
I'm trying to think. There was a scene where I thought, is that him? I'm going to type it in now to see if it was the scene that I thought it was. Oh, it doesn't seem to be a picture. Damn. Well, there you go. He must have been in it, maybe in the background or something. But he was there. Maybe he was shooting pheasants. He was definitely there. I think they were all there.
He's so down on the list of casts that I feel like they kind of airbrushed him out a little bit.
Well, they didn't really have anyone in the movie, did they? Like, really? Like, Camilla wasn't even in the movie.
Yeah, it's not
just
really...
seen in the background.
It's not really meant to be a movie other than Kristen Stewart, really. Everyone else is meant to really be more of like a statue.
Yeah.
Like towering over her, scolding her. That's how it felt. I mean, it's a good... I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. But I do wonder about rewatchability. Is this a movie that you could rewatch? Because I feel like I don't know if I would again.
No, I don't think that means that it's not a good movie.
I didn't say it wasn't a good movie. I just meant...
Because I feel like any movie with a twist, I can't watch it again. Because I know like you can go into a movie and you watch it from a different perspective and you start picking up on things. But that best bit about the movie would have been the twist, you know?
You can watch The Sixth Sense again or Usual Suspects.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be excited to watch it. But I know what you mean. You can, yeah. You can enjoy those movies again. But you look at it from a different perspective, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess it would be like watching another movie, a new movie. But you're maybe right. I think it's maybe because it's a bit of a slow burner. You kind of get everything you need from this. You're like, yeah, I've seen this now. We can move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like if it doesn't ever come on again, I might go, oh, maybe I'll see it again, come back to it. But not anytime soon. It might be like a spare of the moment. Like, I think, yeah, I'll watch it. Why not? But I'm not going to be, like, clamoring to see.
So you didn't watch this one twice. You used to watch the movies on this podcast.
I used to watch
two or three times,
but I decided once, and I thought if I watch them once and then have enough of a leading, you know, to sort of fester on what I've seen, I've normally found that more interesting. If you watch it twice, sometimes the second time, because it's so close between each other, it can be a chore.
Yeah, it can be a chore.
Hence why I didn't know Prince Andrew was in this movie.
Completely miss him, yeah. I mean, I miss him as well. I don't think he spoke. Just a background character, but yeah. So, verdict, good?
Yeah, I'd stick it in good.
Me too. This week's top five. So, I decided, because it's a biopic that we watched, and I thought she looked a lot like Diana in this movie. I thought the hair was on point, or her facial expressions, her mannerisms seemed very like Diana from what I've seen of videos of Diana and photographs, etc. So I thought she was quite a good likeness for Diana. So that got me thinking, who is the best likeness in terms of playing a real person in a movie? And I will say, if you have gone too prosthetic and too makeup focused, then in my eyes, you have lost, my friend.
I didn't know this was a win or lose competition.
It's not a win or lose, but you've lost my respect.
I never had your respect.
Yeah, no. So anyone who, you know, without the power of makeup and the power of CGI and all that crap, who was a good casting for their biopic character? I'm going to let you start. You've got a smirk on your face. I imagine you've put someone in there who maybe, you know, was good at the role, but anyone could have played them because they had so much makeup on.
Exactly. So my number five is Robert Downey Jr. playing Charlie Chaplin in Chaplin.
Okay, that's fine, though, because there's a lot to take there. Mannerisms, I would say, are an important part of it, too. So,
What I went with was mannerisms, voice, and...
Voice is good.
Look the part. I think they've got to hit three stages for me. They can't just look the part. They've also got to feel like they're the part. So my five feel like if they superimposed Robbie Downey Jr. into an old Chaplin movie, like The Gold Rush, I bet I wouldn't even notice.
Yeah, I mean, he does look pretty good as him. I'm not going to lie. I've never seen this movie, though.
I haven't seen it for a while. That's why it's number five, because I remember he's good in it, but I haven't seen it for a long time. I need to try and source this one out again.
Yeah, it does look interesting. It kind of seems like one that's under the radar a little bit. It doesn't really get mentioned, does it?
I think, it's sort of lost in time, weirdly, because I remember this was nominated for a few Oscars. I think Robbie Downey Jr. was nominated for Best Actor. So it's not like at 1992 it was unheard of, but no one talks about it so much.
No, directed by Richard Attenborough as well.
Yeah, and it's a different Downey Jr. You know, Downey Jr., when he came back, his resurgence, he's played this same Downey Jr. character since Tony Stark. That's always the same sort of, even before then. I mean, we can go back to the Scanner Darkly, or even before then, where he played this Downey Jr. character. But back then, he would immerse himself more into different roles. And I think this is a prime example of a great performance by him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've never seen it. I do want to see it, though, now that I've looked at it. This was one I was looking at as well. And I was thinking, but I can't put it in my list because I haven't seen it. Yeah, it missed out just. I went for my number five, Jennifer Lopez as Selena Quintanilla. Now, she looks a lot like her. And this actually is a bit of a theme as well, because this movie is going, I think it's going back into cinema soon. Maybe this week, because it's like the 15th anniversary of it, I think. If I'm right in saying that.
I've never seen it.
I saw it a long time ago. I can't really remember. Yeah, sorry, it's the 25th anniversary of It was a breakthrough movie as well. 2 weeks ago, it's the 25th anniversary, so this actually made it back into cinema recently. Yeah, I saw it a long time ago, but I need to see it again. I remember it. As soon as I saw it when I was doing research for this top five, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. But yeah, it's got okay reviews. It's got good reviews. Some people don't like it. Some people do like it. Different Jennifer Lopez as well. Different, you know, probably not the sort of role that you see her in very often. But yeah, her breakthrough role, 1997. And she looks like her. That's the main point. She really looks like her.
I have no idea who this is, really. I mean, this is a character I've never heard of before, but it sounds interesting.
I think it is quite an interesting story. Obviously, she died very young, age 23, and this is kind of the build-up to that. And she was, very big songwriter and musician back in the day.
And she was a singer, was she?
She was a singer. Singer, songwriter, model, actress, fashion designer. Basically, she had everything going for her. And then she was tragically murdered when she was 23. So,
and she's going out for a glow. Story. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's my number five.
My number four is Charlize Theron playing Aline Wuornos in Monster.
This is another one that nearly made my list, actually, as well.
Now, this is where you said nearly made your list. Now, she had to transform a little bit with the makeup department. There are some edits. But I don't think you can get away with not having edits. But the reason I put her in this, one, I think Monster is a great movie. But secondly, I have seen the two documentaries of Alina Wuornos. And if you watch them back to back again, it's really uncanny how much she took from that performance. She won an Oscar for it. You can see why. She really embodies the character, which must be hard to embody a serial killer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is a difficult role to play. Definitely.
Oh, and it's a grim movie. It is bleak as fuck. And we're missing a good serial killer movie. We haven't had a serial killer movie in a while. This one is grim. It really feels, it feels dirty, it feels low end, you know. It does feel like we are seeing like dirt under the fingernails kind of movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't glamour anything up. This isn't Hollywood. This is independent filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that. I don't think I've seen this movie for a while as well. Another movie I've not seen for ages. I think I saw it. It was on TV late night, probably when I was 17, 16 or something like that, and I watched it then, and I haven't seen it since. But I do remember brief bits of it. It's weird how when you just see a random movie, you kind of forget that you saw it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one of those movies I forget that I saw, but it's a very long time
ago. There's so many movies out there, it's hard to remember them all.
Which is one of those ones where, like, when it came on the TV, I had no idea what this movie was, but I just watched it, and I was just like, is this a good movie? You know, when you're young, and you're just watching it because it's on, you're like, well, I enjoyed it. And then you look it up, and you're like, oh, yeah. Because I didn't have the power of the internet back then, you know. I couldn't just Google on my phone, Monster. I'd have to go downstairs, load up the computer, dial in. And then
by the time you dialed in, I thought, well, I better look at some porn while I'm here.
Well, that would be a why not? When in Rome.
When in Rome. And then you forgot exactly what you were looking for. Yep. Good old internet.
They always get you. My number four. Ben Kingsley playing Gandhi. Because I feel like this was... probably was a very difficult movie to cast at the time. Who could play that role? Like, that's a difficult role to play. And he looks like him. He really looks like him. You just put glasses on him and that's it. It's done. It's fucking him. It's all it took. The moustache and the glasses. And you're like, okay, yeah, it's him. He's an interesting character, Gandhi, because I think he is a bit controversial if you really look into some of the the details of his lifestyle. But we won't go into that. But yeah, in terms of like, who else could play him? I don't know. I couldn't name another actor who could have played Gandhi.
Not in 1982. That would have been hard to find a guy who wasn't basically going in blackface in 1982.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I haven't seen this. It's another Richard Attenborough movie. I haven't seen this in a while. Obviously, it's one of my dad's favorites. This is one of his big boys. And that's probably why I haven't seen it in a while. It's felt like one of their movies you stick on a Sunday and you think, ah, it's still got 3 more hours left. but, you know, I have 3 hours to spare these days.
There you go.
Only on a Sunday, though. That's the only time I've got 3 hours to spare.
Fair enough. I could watch this movie, actually, because I'm going away next week and there are no trains running from Liverpool to London, so I have to get a coach, and the coach takes 5.5 hours. So I could watch Gandhi twice.
And just miss the last part of it the second time.
Well, you know, traffic and that. This is the estimated time.
Yeah.
Go watch the director's cut and a bit of the deleted scenes. And an interview with Ben Kingsley about the role. You know what I mean? I could watch Gandhi. I've never seen Gandhi, but I do want to see it.
You've never seen Gandhi, and you put it on your list.
I've never seen Gandhi.
I think there needs to be some sort of... You've lost my respect now. You're telling me I can't put people in prosthetics, but you can put people in that you haven't seen in a movie.
I did my research into this. I looked at some
scenes.
You've
got to watch the movie. Not some scenes. Oh, I watched the trailer. You got to fucking watch the movie at least.
All right. Well, I went for Ben Kingsley.
Asterix on that one, I believe.
Hey, I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one.
Yeah, if you saw
it. And also, this is a
movie.
Tell
us next week after your plane trip to wherever or coach trip wherever, and then watch it and then say, actually, I want to put it fifth.
Nah, it goes fourth. Is that where I put it? Yeah, I put it fourth. It goes fourth. But yeah, I just feel like this is another also movie. I don't think they'd remake this movie. I don't think they'd do another biopic about Gandhi. I think they've done it. It's nailed. It's done. Someone's played him. No one else is going to play him now.
It could happen. You never know.
It could happen. You can't write it off. But yeah, that's my number four.
My number three is a man who I could have picked so many performances from because he's just got one of them morphing faces. And there were two characters I could pick between, and I decided to pick the first one that really stood out as the transformative role for him, and this is Michael Sheen playing Tony Blair in The Queen.
Okay.
He's so good in this one that he's played Tony Blair twice now in another TV movie. I believe he played Tony Blair. That's how good he is. That they want him to play Tony Blair twice. He looks like him. He's got the mannerisms right. He's just a perfectly cast Tony Blair.
I do. What I love about these sort of things with biopics is how much do you reckon they really study the character? Like, because he does. He's got the smile. He's got the hand. He's got the way he sits. He's got it completely nailed down. That's a lot of studying that you're doing. Like body language is very important for selling a character, isn't it? It's not just about the voice and, you know, the mannerisms and like the tiny little details, like the way where you place your hands and stuff like that. Very important. So,
I mean, the one I was possibly going to do instead of that one, it was between Tony Blair and Brian Clough in The Damned United because he plays a great Brian Clough. And he's got the mannerisms and everything right. He looks less like Brian Clough than he does Tony Blair. So that's why Tony Blair had the edge.
Okay. I'll give you that one. Number three? My number three. Eddie Redmayne as Stephen Hawking.
Did you see this movie?
I did see this movie.
Okay.
How would I ever have seen this movie? Haven't I?
Everyone's organic.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. The young Stephen Hawking nailed it. Do you agree? You look at them side by side.
He looks like him, yeah. He does look like him. I'm not a big fan of the movie.
I think the movie's okay. I think it, yeah, I know what you mean.
It's like, you're talking about a man like Stephen Hawking, and I just don't think it really captures what was interesting about Stephen Hawking, in my opinion. It was, the same thing I had with, like when we were talking about that Diana one, that Naomi Watson. I think they're getting like a famous historical figure, but let's tell a light version of this character instead of like a real interesting version of Stephen Hawking. Like his favourite chip shop in Felixstowe. They never mentioned that once in that movie. And
is his favourite chip shop in Felixstowe?
It is.
How do you know this?
Because there's a picture of him there.
Okay.
It's renowned. Everybody knows it.
I never knew this. I'll be honest. I never knew this.
Now you do.
I'm trying to. I don't know. I'm trying to find it now. Which one is it?
I think it's still open? The fish bar.
Oh yeah, that I do know that one. Stephen Hawking, Felixstowe. Didn't think I'd ever be typing in Stephen Hawking, Felixstowe, but here we are. No, it hasn't come up yet.
I keep it under the radar.
I can't find this picture. You've made it up.
It's a picture on the wall of the fish bar. Go there next time and say, Stephen Hawkins, where did he used to sit? And I'll say, there. And I'll say, thank you very much. And then they say, do you want to buy anything? I say, no, I just wanted to know that. You've wasted our time. We opened up and everything for you. Well, you know, that was your loss. That was your stupidity, not mine.
I mean, fair play. Fair play. I do love these little thingies. They're little, like, Felix says, Stephen Hawking's day out at Suffolk Seaside. And then they have no pictures.
He's a very just like, he private
was there.
Person.
Believe us. He was there.
Please believe us.
He was there. He's
a Maybe it was another guy in a wheelchair. How many people have wheelchairs in Felix? Come on. Stephen Hawking's. He had glasses.
Exactly.
That wheelchair and glasses. It's Stephen Hawking.
But yeah, anyway, back to what I was saying. I think he was very well cast. I think he played the role quite well. And he just looked like him. The younger version of him really looked like him. And I think that's a hard role to play as well. It's a difficult role to play. There you go. That's my number three.
Fair enough. My number two, and when I thought about it, I thought, how could it not be? And that's Tom Hardy as Charlie Bronson in Bronson.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I didn't think about that one.
He is not Tom Hardy in this movie. He is Charlie Bronson. And I am unconvinced otherwise. I do not believe Tom Hardy actually starred in this movie. I think they released Charlie Bronson and they just let him film his movie. It is such a transformative movie. I think he really transforms himself, body, mannerisms, everything into this otherworldly character. I mean, he's beyond words, I think, Charlie Bronson. He's a very strange individual. In a good way and a bad way. It's all right.
Mainly bad, though.
It's all right to be ordinary and not unordinary, you know, to be your own person. But he also comes with this sort of built-up anger. And I think Tom Hardy plays it so well. It was the first movie I ever really saw him in. It was his breakout role for me. And it just stands as just one of the best characters who is a real life person ever to be depicted on screen.
It's good, and to be fair, like this, he didn't get any nominations for this role either, did he?
It was a small British movie though, wasn't it? I don't think it went a lot of places.
Didn't have the campaign it fully.
And he wasn't Tom Hardy then. No one really knew who Tom Hardy was then.
I feel like he would be. I feel like people did know he was. Maybe they didn't. Maybe you're right.
No, his breakout role was Inception for like American audiences, which was the year after Bronson.
Yeah, I suppose. He did play this role brilliantly well. It's interesting, guys. There's a story about him that came out last year about, because he visited Bronson in prison, didn't he, to try and obviously learn his mannerisms and stuff like that. Apparently, as soon as the movie came out, he wasn't allowed to visit him anymore. He completely got banned. So maybe Bronson didn't like this movie. Do you think that if you would have watched this as Bronson, would you have been like, that was a bad portrayal of me? You made me look bad.
I don't know. Maybe because Bronson comes off as a unhinged character, maybe he just got bored of Tom Hardy. Because if I remember rightly, on the premiere during the red carpet, I believe they had a recording of Bronson on the red carpet saying, check out this movie. It stars Tom Hardy. He's really fucking good in it. Shit like that. So I don't know. It's hard to know. I think he's too odd, Charlie Bronson, to truly say that was his thinking rational, because from what we know about him, is anything about Charlie Bronson rational?
Probably not. I'd probably go as far as saying no to that one. But still. My number two, I struggled to put these in order. I have my number one is completely nailed down. There's no shifting my number one. The rest of them are in a peculiar order. I don't know if this one warrants number two, but I'm giving it number two anyway. Joaquin Phoenix playing Johnny Cash in Walk the Line. He looks like him. Yes, I don't think it's a difficult likeness to get right, really. I think other people could have played him. But I think he actually played this role really, really well. And it wasn't just the way he looks. It was also the mannerisms. And I feel like he really indulged himself in this role as well. He's a proper method actor, isn't he? So I would 100% guarantee that he was living the life of Johnny Cash for months on end in the build-up to this movie. And he does a good job. So, it goes to him. And a special mention to Reese Witherspoon as well, playing June Carter Cash, too. Mm. I think she was nominated for that, wasn't she?
She won an Oscar for that one.
Yeah. Oh, she actually won the Oscar for that. She did. So, that's another thing that came from the movie. Bounced off each other. She won the Oscar. Was he nominated for an Oscar for this?
He was, yeah.
He was nominated. He didn't win. Who won it that year?
Funny enough, another guy who played a real life person, that would have been Philip Seymour Hoffman for Capote. Truman Capote.
Yeah.
Who isn't on my list, that's by the way.
That's just unfortunate, isn't it? Competing. I think when you play a real life character as well, you're more likely to get a nice Oscar nod, aren't you? Because it's a difficult... So if you play the role well, then you have a point of reference, don't you, in terms of how good the acting job is?
Yes and no. I think they always say about the Oscars, Oscars like two things. They like if you play someone they know or if you play someone who's disabled. Those are two things that get you an Oscar nomination or
Eddie Redmayne did the both.
Yeah.
Did the both. And that's why he didn't win the Oscar. For that role. Did he win the Oscar for that role? I don't even know.
Eddie Redmayne? He did. Yes. He did win the Oscar for that role.
He did. There you go. So there you go. Nailed it. You know, two and two. Who's your number one? I think our number ones might be the same.
My number one won an Oscar for his role. My number one, I think, looks the part.
It's not the same.
He talks the part and he sings the part. And the singing was the thing that got me to over the line of, this guy, to me, is... I tried to look at back-to-back photos of both of them at the same age that they were during filming, just to see how much they looked alike, and they looked absolutely identical. And that is Jamie Foxx playing Ray Charles in Ray.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
I think he's just... I think he embodies that character so... It's almost effortlessly. You know, he sings like Ray Charles. It's not like Rami Malek where like they had to bring other voices in to make him sound like Freddie Mercury, which really dampened the performance when I heard that. But this one is all Jamie Foxx. And he just... I think this is... And sadly, I think this is Jamie Foxx's best performance. And I don't think he's ever really delivered like he has in this movie. It's like he's gave it his all here, and he's never reached them heights again.
Yeah. Yeah, you could say... I think the thing about Jamie Foxx is, though, I don't think you can hold that against him, because this is one of the most multi-talented people in the industry.
Yeah.
He can sing, he can act, and he's funny. He does it all. And he's not bad looking either, is he?
No. So he's easy on the eyes.
He's doing all right for himself. You know what? What happened? Why did he get all of this great stuff?
I don't know.
They gave him all these talents. What's wrong with him? There's something wrong with him.
There is something wrong with him.
There has to be.
Bad movie choices is his weakness, his Achilles heel. Is doing movies like Stealth instead of like good movies.
Yeah. But hey, he won the Oscar. That's it, isn't it?
Double nominated that year as well. Double nominated.
Yeah. There you go. If you win the Oscar, fuck it. Move on. You've done it. You've done it now. I think that's why Adam Sandler, like, he went for it, Adam Sandler, with Punch Drunk Love. He didn't get it, and he was like, nah, fuck it. That was the bit. If I was going to win it, it was going to be that. I'm not going to win
what
it.
What about Uncut Gems? So, what about Rain Over Me? I mean, those are like Oscar bait a bit.
Rain Over Me, a bit of Oscar bait, but Uncut Gems was, but that was genuinely good.
Yeah, no, but so is Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, no, it is genuinely good. But I'm saying, like, these roles are like, for certain actors, they come around every 15 years, you know? They're not like every year, they're like, oh, I could get it this year. Adam Sandler's not going to do a movie like that every year. I don't think Jamie Foxx is going to do a movie like that every year.
I don't even know what movies Jamie Foxx does.
He just appears.
He just appears. That is,
just turns up and you're like, oh shit, there's Jamie Foxx in this movie.
He's not even like leading roles, is he? He's just like, suddenly he's in the movie. It's like, oh, it's Jamie Foxx there.
He was in Spider-Man No Way Home as well.
Exactly. It's like, oh, Jamie Foxx is in there. He's not Spider-Man, is he?
Baby Driver, he was in as well.
Again, he just turned up in that movie. Yeah.
Horrible Bosses 2, he was in.
Again, was he a horrible boss?
He does just turn up. I think that's the best way to describe
him. He was a pimp. When he was the pimp or the hitman, they hired for that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and although you could say, Django Unchained, he didn't just turn up for that movie, did he?
He did, because Will Smith turned it down.
Did Will Smith turn that down?
Yeah.
Thank God. I think Jamie Foxx.
It's probably best performance. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good, really, really good movie.
I don't know. You could say that Will Smith's already played that performance in Wild Wild West, and that's why he turned it down.
Maybe. It's Will Smith, mate. He does what he wants. Slaps people on stages, turns down big movies. That's Will Smith. Who cares?
He turned down The Matrix.
That's stupid. Why did he turn down The Matrix? What, in the lead role?
Yeah.
He turned that down?
Yeah.
And Keanu was next. Was he second in line, Keanu?
I don't know who was second, but Keanu got it. But I reckon he went to Quentin Tarantino. So
that made Keanu's career.
He said, look, we're making like a violent version of Wild Wild West. And Will Smith said, all right, is Cisco in it? And he said, nah, there's no music video with Cisco in it. He said, well, I ain't interested in it. He said, we got John Legend. I said, Cisco. And not Cisco. John Legend. Cisco or no Will go.
Yeah. Will Smith said, Cisco's not in the movie. You think I'm going to take this movie? Well, you're wrong, 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 wrong. Please tell me you got that. For God's sake, wasted on him.
He did it wrong. I know it's the Fong song.
He sang the Fong song, yeah.
He also sang the Wild West song. We're going straight through The Wild Wild West, which is the best bit of that movie, and the unbelievable poorly CGI spider, and Kenneth Branagh just chewing scenery as he always does.
Kenneth Branagh's another one. He's everywhere, isn't he, this guy?
He is. Absolutely. He's a bit like Jamie Foxx. He just turns up.
Just appears in categories every year.
he does what Jamie Foxx does in movies, but he does in Oscar categories. Oh, look, Kenneth Branagh's nominated. Is that Best Supporting Actress? It's Kendall Branagh today. Oh, okay.
Kendall Branagh. My number one. I'm surprised this didn't make your top five. In terms of the way he
I'm
looks...
I'm surprised we got no crossovers.
Yeah, we didn't have a single one. In terms of the way he looks, doesn't look exactly like him. But every single thing else, I mean, the hairstyle's there. Every single thing else, the mannerisms, the voice, absolutely everything. Jim Carrey playing Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon.
It was a stellar performance. It was a stretch, but I think, like you said, because when you see... Andy Kaufman, he's such a recognisable face. Yeah, they don't look similar at all. I think that's the one reason.
Yeah. But in terms of the way he's cast, though, it's pretty fucking nailed on. He does look like him in the movie, though, because the way, you know, the grey jacket and the turtleneck under the shirt with the hair slicked back, they look very alike in that photo.
I tell you who does look alike in that movie. The actor that plays Jerry Lawyer in that movie, he looks a lot like Jerry Lawyer.
Are you sure it's not Jerry Lawyer?
Don't be ridiculous. And the one that looks like Christopher Lloyd, he looks a lot like Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yeah, he does look a lot like Christopher Lloyd. You're right. Was there a thingy in it? Was Jim Ross on it? No, Jim Ross was just on the set. Turned up on the set. Apparently goes everywhere with Jerry Lawyer. They had at one point they had to be together at all times, him and Jerry Lawyer. Slobberknocker.
What's he like, his second arm?
Apparently so. Yeah. Mannerisms. Nailed down. I mean, we all know how much he committed to this role. He fully went for it, didn't he? He stayed in character the whole time. People were sick of him. And I saw was it the documentary about him playing this role? I saw that on Netflix as well. So get a very good insight into how much he gave to this role. And I just think it was just a nailed on great performance. And Andy Kaufman is one of those notorious people, isn't he? Like, to the point of even when he died, people were like, is it just a joke? Like, he's very infamous and very mysterious. He's an enigma. And I think Jim Carrey played that role really, really well. And I wouldn't have put anyone else in that position. So that's why he's my number one, because I wouldn't have put any single other person in that role.
What about Andy Kaufman?
He can't play himself, can he? That's the whole point. He can't play himself.
Why can't he?
He can't even play himself. I don't think anyone can play themselves. You just can't play yourself. Who writes it? Do you write it?
Howard Stern's played himself before.
Someone else writes you in the movie.
I think it's clever. I think it's great.
You can't play yourself.
I think
you
could.
Can't play yourself.
It's possible.
No, you can't.
I think
you
could.
No, you can't. Because, no.
Agree to disagree. No.
But it does bring me on to my next question.
Who would I play?
I didn't prepare you for this question.
Okay.
If you had to pick one actor to play you in a movie.
To play me.
And... they're playing you as you are now, and the actor playing you is playing you as they are now. So you can't be like Leonardo DiCaprio 10 years ago. You have to be like right now, how they look. They're playing you right now.
Well,
who do you think could embody your personality the best? Not just looks. It could be personality, mannerisms.
I think there's only one, really. It'd be Shia LaBeouf. Right. I think that's simple. Next.
Yeah, I think in terms of looks, yeah. He does, yeah, you have the same look.
I think you could get my mannerisms. I think me and Shia LaBeouf, I mean, he's copied me throughout the whole of his career anyway, so, you know, he's pretty much my shadow, so.
There was a point when you had a shaved head, actually, and he had a shaved head before you, so I'd say...
Yeah, but he got second wind that I was going to do that.
Alrighty.
It's like the bag over the head. I mean, I was going to do that, and then I saw he did it. I just threw that bag away.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't be seen to be that guy.
No. When he's that guy.
Even if it was your idea first, no one's going to believe you.
Exactly.
I don't know who would play me.
You mean you had time to think about this and you haven't got an answer?
Well, I kind of wanted to see what we would spitfire between us, you know? Who would you pick? Play me.
I reckon he probably looks more like you now. I would say the guy that played Dewey in Malcolm in the Middle. He looks the most like you. When you were kids, sake. You two looked the same. If as long as he hasn't like completely...
No, he's not grown into his ears or his nose, so definitely not him.
No?
No, his ears and his nose are still as big as they were when he was a kid. He hasn't grown into them. So it can't be
your nose is pretty big.
My ears aren't that big.
Yeah, but your nose.
My ears aren't like that, though, are they?
I know, but you know, you can pin them back, can he? You can put a hat on. Remember that time you wore a hat for the whole movie? That could be you.
That's a lazy choice. I'm not accepting that for 1 second. I don't know. I'm going to type in actors.
That looks like me.
28. 28-year-old actors. Let's have a look. What about Ansel Elgort? Is it Elgort?
You look nothing like Ansel Elgort.
You don't think so?
No, and I don't think he'd do a good British accent either.
Do I even have a British accent?
Do you even have a British accent?
Yeah, do I? Like, really?
Just going to leave that stupid question in the ether right now.
No one wants to answer that one.
We'll let the people decide what they think about that question.
Well, apparently he's the only 28-year-old actor.
What, the world?
Of any significance. Yeah, well, apparently according to this website, there must be another 20-year-old fucking actor.
Why does he have to be 20? Like, why can't he be 30?
Well, 28, I'm getting 28 so I can, you know, have a base to build upon, you know? Because that means they're around the same age as me. Harry Kane's 28. He could play me, couldn't he? Go on, Harry. Give it a go. No, I don't know. I actually can't think of anyone who could play
me. I can think of someone now. I just saw someone's face. I'm just having a little look at your face, at his face. Oh, yeah. I think he could play you. Johnny Flynn.
Johnny Flynn. I feel a little bit insulted.
Why?
He doesn't look like me at all.
He looks more like you than Ansel Elgort.
Yeah, potentially. He's also 39 and South African.
Well, he's actually English, but he doesn't look... I mean, come on, he doesn't look 39. Give him credit.
Yeah, well, he doesn't look 39.
He looks 30. There, but... And if you see many biopics... Like John C. Reilly in Dewey Cox, they're normally in their 40s when they play 15-year-olds. So, you know, you have to think about that.
That is true. That is very true. I'll give you that. But that was also a joke of a movie. That wasn't a real movie. That was a funny movie.
Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump.
I'm gonna try and find someone. There must be someone. What about Tom Holland? I think Patterson could do a good job of me, actually. What about the kid who was in Sex Education? What's his name?
Then you've gone younger.
Nah, he's older than you think. Asa Butterfield, 25. What about him? He could play me.
Yeah, go for it. It's your pick.
I'll go for him. He can play me in the movie. He's a bit awkward. You know, not ugly. Just, you know, same. I'm not ugly. And he's a good actor. And he's British as well. So, you know, straight away he can do it. I'll go for him. Asa Butterfield.
What about Gary Oldman? I think Gary Oldman could play both of us pretty well. He could play anyone, now? Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman can play anyone, to be fair. He's a very versatile man. But he's also 64. He's actually younger than I thought he was. But yeah, all right. Gary Oldman can play us in the future. He can do dual roles. There's both. The same scene.
And he can do it, goddammit. He can do it.
Anyway, we're fucking rabbiting on here. Let's get to next week's movie.
Yes, you do have a British accent.
Fuck's sake.
So next week's movie is not a movie, but it is a what I call a knockout round. We're going to do what I have. It's a new game that I have.
Slobberknocker.
The Slobberknocker. It's called the Box Office Knockout. Now, what we do is I pick a year.
And it's an Easter special, is it? It's Easter next weekend.
It is Easter an special. Easter special, but I might be doing this more than just Easter. So we're going to pick a year. I've picked a easy year at start, the year of your birth year, which is 1993.
1993, good year.
We're going to look at worldwide the top 30. I'm going to look at them. I'm going to say them actually the top 30 movies that grossed that year. And we're going to pick out, in our opinion, which movies we think represent 1993. When we think of 1993, which one of those movies, and also kind of get an idea of like what the world was interested in that year. Like what kind of movies did they like?
Okay. Well, don't reveal the top 30 now. We can save
that.
I'm not going to.
Otherwise, okay. There'd be like a 5-minute show next week. So yeah, we're going to reveal them next week.
Okay, good. I thought you were going to reveal them now. I'll just stop you.
No.
Okay. Well, send me the list so I don't.
No. You're going in blind.
The wrong list.
You're going in blind.
I'm going blind.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what they are.
All right, fair. That's fair. That's fair enough. Okay. All right. That sounds good. So we whittle them down to what? From first to 30, what represents 1993 the most?
Yeah, if obviously we haven't seen them, they're out of here. And if we think they're good movies, if we think they represent 1993, like when we think of 1993, is this a movie that we think is one of the best of the year or one of the most memorable of the year?
Well, I was not even 1 year old for the entire of 1993.
Yeah.
In fact, I made it at a max 6 months in 1993. The answer to that would be pooing myself. What is most representative of me shitting myself and crying and puking and, you know, just being a big fucking lump on the ground? What represents that the most? Some would say a Sunday afternoon. Others would say Jurassic Park.
Others would say Boxing Day.
Oh, Boxing Day, but yeah. But I mean, that would technically be too realistic, actually, based on this year anyway. All right, cool. All right, well, yeah. All right. The answer is Jurassic Park.
We'll find out what the answer is.
We will find out. All right, catch us next week for the Box Office Knockout.
1993.
Catch you. Goodbye.
Bye.